what fascinated me, and again, rather than framing it as left brain, right brain, we did a dissection very early on. And you may have heard this story, because I talk about it a lot, of the human brain. And what happens is they wheel in these trolleys with sort of Tupperware buckets in formalin. Yeah? And so you're wearing surgical gloves, because obviously it's a toxic substance that nonetheless you need, because it preserves the brain for cutting up. I remember rolling up my sleeve and plunging my hand in the bucket, and then holding in one hand a brain. Yeah? And I remember thinking, if I wasn't wearing gloves and a bit got under my fingernail, would that be the bit that somebody loved with? Or would it be a memory? Or would it be a hope? Or would it be a hope? Could you have the habit of biting your fingernails under your fingernail? You know, just
genetically.
I mean, just weird. I mean, just mind-blowing. That's what fascinated me. So I didn't have a very specific science question. I was just amazed that this sludgy thing that occupied the same universe as nasal hair or saliva or earwax or something, you know, that it nonetheless, you know, seemed to be everything that encapsulated the individual. And that really, that's what, there's a more philosophical thing rather than a scientific question.
But then you're holding a brain, and of course there's a physical entity, but no two brains are the same.
No, exactly. That's the whole point. Well, I think brains are similar, minds are not, yeah? And for me, the way, and the reason we use those two words is the mind is the personalization of the brain. And at the physical level, it's the way that the brain cell connections are unique to each person, because even if you're a clone, that's an identical twin, when you're born, although you have a full complement of brain cells, it's the growth of the connections after birth that accounts for the growth of the brain. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you have the opportunities, you interact with the environment, they will shape and strengthen and so on, and atrophy. So you end up with unique patterns of brain cells, and that's what makes you different from your clone, your twin.
But
that's what
as a neuroscientist then, was the value of your work being able to inform neurosurgery and make it better, or intrinsically you wanted just to understand the brain for its own sake? I mean, I wonder to what end you wanted to put your neuroscience.
Sure. Neither, there's a middle way. So what I was working on was an unusual thing that my then boss, my supervisor, had discovered in the periphery that he thought might happen in the brain. And I won't get into too many, but it's a novel idea that this boring old enzyme has another job other than being a boring old enzyme. And I had to find out what it was doing in the brain. And for the 3 years of my thesis, what it came down to is it had a very important job to do in the very area, by chance, that is lost in Parkinson's disease. So I didn't wake up one morning thinking I want to cure Parkinson's disease or indeed Alzheimer's. It happened to be the mechanism, the process that I'd been studying honed in, and actually I learnt of all the areas of the brain, the areas of the brain this was relevant were the areas that are lost in neurodegenerative diseases. So that's what got me interested in Parkinson's and also Alzheimer's, which I can talk forever about, which I'd love to talk about. But that's what's really, so I didn't wake up saying I'm going to cure Alzheimer's, I'm going to be a scientist. You don't wake up like that. You just let your curiosity and your enthusiasm follow what fate unfolds for you. And I find that the most wonderful privilege to have had to have been able to do that.